Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm Jordan Maddox. Today I'm sitting down with someone who might change how you think about one of the most misunderstood instruments out there. Cactus Harris is a keyboardist, conductor, educator, and organist located here in Fresno. He's the dean of the San Joaquin Valley chapter of the American Guild of Organists. He teaches music appreciation at Clovis Community College, and he's at the man at the console of the mighty 1928 Robert Morton Theater Organ at Warner's Theater in downtown Fresno. I'll admit up front that I've had my own on again, off again relationship with the organ over the years, so this one was a real treat for me. We get into all of it: why the accordion deserves more respect than it gets, the surprisingly rowdy origins of the pipe organ, what it actually takes to keep a nearly 100-year-old instrument alive, and whether you can get away with more mistakes on an organ than you can on a piccolo. We play a round of overrated versus underrated, wade into arts funding and Measure P, track down the best hole-in-the-wall food near Fresno State, and finally settle the debate on whether the Phantom of the Opera is overrated or not. Let's get into it and meet Cactus. Infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best. Fresno's best. Cactus, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Ooh, that's an excellent question, and I think it depends on the occasion, but we're a family of five, so if it's the five of us going out cheap and easy, it's good, but if it's date night with just Krista and I, of course, we like the typical foodie places in town, Annex, Heirloom, and all that. But we live over here by Fresno State.
Maybe a hole-in-the-wall place, like something that people wouldn't expect, because we do get a lot of people that recommend similar restaurants, and it's just what it is. But
now we live over here by Fresno State, and I'll tell you one little pocket that is perfect because it's got a little bit of everything. It's right here at the corner of Cedar and Barstow, across from Bulldog Stadium. I can go into that corner, and there's an excellent little Thai food place, there's excellent Chinese food to go, Tacos Marquitos Mexican, there's Halal Mediterranean Sushi, and there's even a place for me to get my hair cut. So that's where we frequent. It's just around the corner. It's nice and easy. And like I said, you're in the mood for whatever, it's all there. But there's a nice little Thai place there, Taste of Thai now. They do Thai street foods, real small, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I've been on the hunt for a good Thai place for a while. I've been going to, I think it's called Satay, which is like on Walnut or something in Shepherd. Anyway, over there next to it, there's a yoga studio next door. But yeah, that's some of my favorite foods. What do you order when you go there?
I've gotten really into curry recently. More getting into the spicy stuff. Red curry is good. They make an excellent papaya salad, which is definitely on the spicy side, but refreshing.
Yeah, a papaya salad is one of those perfect things where if you do it right, it's just perfect as it is.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about all things music. Obviously, we're going to focus on organs quite a bit today because that's your area of specialty and then also my area of interest. But I want to start with some kind of background questions first. Yeah. Do you think more people should be playing the accordion?
I do. And the accordion is actually the keyboard instrument that I started with.
The case, because I think it's people perceive it as like a joke instrument or like something that's like a pirate ship costume is associated or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. I'll give you a little bit of background on my experience with it. My mother, actually, she played the accordion and it lived in the closet growing up. But I would pull it out and go through her old music books, and that's how I taught myself and figured it out. But she got the accordion because her parents owned a bar and somebody owned a tab, and he was a door-to-door accordion salesman. And that was the joking thing, was a reality is, they would go around door-to-door selling these instruments. And it was stomach Steinway, right? You got a piano on your chest, you can take anywhere and go anywhere with it.
Do you feel like you need to be able to sing playing the accordion? Because it feels like they go hand in hand, an accordion player has some ballad that they have.
Yeah, you got the typical Italian songs and all that. Yeah, no, I think it goes together. But the fun part is you've got melody on one side and chords on the other side of your hand. And so you can accompany without any voice and do a lot. But it's flexible. It's a lot of fun. And honestly, you look at the accordion and it's found in nearly every corner of the globe within their own cultural music. And that's pretty amazing.
Wow. I know the first instrument that you learned was the saxophone. And if I'm looking at your CV of instruments that you can play and perform with, it seems like the least complex. All three of the other instruments, that I'm sure you play more, but piano, organ, and accordion, they all involve multiple like things going on simultaneously. Did you find yourself, you're thinking about you as a kid playing the saxophone, did you find yourself seeking more and more complexity?
I think the saxophone was because it was a cool instrument. It is a cool instrument. I mean, I grew up listening to jazz and all that, so I wanted to play like that. But I kind of reached a point where I realized I wasn't going to get any better. There are going to be plenty of other sax players that are way better than I ever was. And it was just for enjoyment. But when I discovered the keyboards, yeah, it was really on my own and self-taught. But like I said, the accordion part, the accompanying, being able to play chords, melody at the same time, instead of just like a normal band instrument where you're doing single line, one note at a time, like the sax. And so, yeah, it just opens up more possibilities.
Let's talk about organ now. I've had a kind of on and again, off again relationship with the organ. I attended Episcopal churches for a long time and spent a lot of time with organ there. I actually have an aunt who's a professional organist and has written books of music and things, and I have watched her kind of jump from job to job, and they tend to have large geographical distances between them because they're less common in terms of hiring practices. It seems like organ is both this fascinating instrument and also this very niche instrument. As a big kind of picture question, what do you think are the most common misconceptions that you hear about organs?
Plenty. That has a lot to do with how it's been portrayed in movies and film over the years, or books. It's always the spooky factor, right? That definitely gets the stereotype there. But I think a lot of people's perceptions about the instrument, unfortunately, are driven by bad experiences with it. And that's many things. That's either an instrument that is not very good, inadequate. And that's just because it's a pipe organ doesn't mean that it's anything phenomenal. There are junky pipe organs out there. And then, of course, how it's played. There's unfortunately, a lot of examples of poor playing out there. So people hear it played poorly, and then they're not interested in it because that's what they've heard. And same thing goes for the accordion or the bagpipes, anything like that. If it's done well, it's worth it. But no, definitely you get a lot of people that have a thought of it's just related to Phantom of the Opera. It's just the spooky music. And that's kind of the nature of the beast. Is it is a lonely instrument. You are by yourself. Your back's usually towards the audience or whoever's listening. And maybe you're tucked up in a loft somewhere where it is dark and dusty. But yeah, I think people haven't had great experiences in the past and maybe think it's boring, sounds boring, just because that's what they've had presented to them and they haven't been able to explore more.
What do you think about the effect of its association with religious music, right? Because some of the best organ music comes from the Baroque period. It comes from periods where music and religion were almost simultaneous in their generation of this kind of art form. And so it feels like the association with religion is trapping it in this niche zone where it could be a wider used, a wider appreciated instrument, but it is in this religious narrow niche. Would you say that's an accurate observation, or would you push back against that?
Yeah, no, totally. The nature of the beast is that it is also a part of the building, right? This is not just a piano you can roll around on stage, but the pipes and everything are part of the architecture. And because of back up to the original kind of ancestor instrument of the pipe organ actually wasn't in churches or involved at all. It was more of a novel kind of box of pipes that they used water to create air pressure to have these instruments play. And they actually would wheel them out on wagons onto a battlefield just because it made a big ruckus noise and would scare people off. And then over the centuries is when the organ kind of migrated into churches and cathedrals, where builders added keyboards, they added more pipes, more different sounds. And because of the nature of the instrument, it was ideal for accompanying sacred music, sacred vocal music, once we started adding instruments in there, but also as a standalone piece of the building. Like I said, these early cathedrals that are still standing today, they are incredible works of art. And whether you're religious or not, I think you can find awe and inspiration from them. And so when you have a instrument that takes over half the building and the sound is just coming from above, it adds to this experience and really creates the soundscape. And I think that's where it has thrived and why we've associated it with religion, of course. But there are many examples of pipe organs outside of churches. Even turn of the century, these instruments were not just
movies, right? You know, yeah. You have organs in movie theaters, and people would have interactions with organs constantly. As they
silent fair
films.
Yeah, the world's fairs, they would build organs in big concert halls and auditoriums because it's really a mechanical marvel, too. And then, yes, moving into silent film era and having an instrument that could replace the pit orchestra in a way, and you can have one person making all these sounds to accompany the movie instead of hiring a whole group of instrumentalists. And that's, where it found its other life in the theater.
Okay, let's talk about performance now. Is pedal technique the hardest thing to learn?
That's a good question. So for those of you, a lot of people don't really realize there are pedals on the organ. And it's actually just a whole keyboard. It's just black and white keys that you're playing with your feet. And I'd say, that is the challenging part. But really, it is all the things. Usually, organists are portrayed as kind of the octopus, right? You have a hand here, a hand there, different keyboards, and then, both feet going at the same time. It takes a lot of coordination, that's for sure.
And then in terms of the learning curve, I feel like each instrument has their own particular, if we looked at it on a graph, like the typical learning curve is this kind of really sharp incline, and then it kind of levels off as you get to those high performance standards where you're trying to be one of the top 5% or 1% best performers in the world at a particular instrument. But for a lot of people, they can get through that initial curve, part of the curve, where you learn a lot fast. Mm-hmm. Where would you say organ is in that curve relative to the other instruments? Is there a lot more work at the front end to build up your capacity? Or what does it look like relative to other instruments in their learning curve?
Yeah, I'd say most people come to the organ, not all, but most come with some piano experience. They've already got the foundation of keyboard. Then it just comes to adding in the coordination. But for example, an instrument that I do not play is the regular 6-string guitar. I just can't get past the callous development that it takes. I lazy out on there and go do something else. But that is one of those parts of the curve on the guitar, to go through the physical pains of it. And with the organ, it is a lot of the muscle memory. And like you said, the pedal foot technique is part of that curve. And then once you get there, it levels out for a while. And it depends on what you're going to do and where you're going to go with it.
Yeah. What's your goal? Do you want to be an organist at a baseball game, or do you want to perform a Bach toccata in Germany or something?
Yeah, totally. Like, totally.
There's a range. Do you think that errors on organs are less noticeable because there's so much chaos and so much sound? If I made an error, if I was in the Philharmonic and I performed a piccolo solo and out of tune, it would be so obvious, right? Whereas an organ, it can be just this tsunami of noise because it is so much louder than instruments that don't project it in the way it does. Do you think you can get away with stuff more often?
I guess you're giving away all my secrets.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, if everything's loud, it's kind of easier to.
Yeah. You know? Part of, again, people's perception experience, I think the organ is related to a lot of dissonance. And I think that, yeah, oftentimes when people are holding out these couple of notes that might have a little bit of rub between them, if you just lay into it, it seems like it's supposed to happen. I'll admit, yeah, you can get by with some of those things. But, and then there's other cases where it is totally not. And I actually think you can cheat a little bit more with the piano because you can use the sustain pedal to kind of roll over and kind of cheat some articulations. But with the organ, you can't always do that and can't take it back. And speaking of kind of the loudness, unlike a piano where the harder you press the key, the louder the harder the hammer strikes the string and the louder it is. That's not how the organ works. It's a box of whistles, and the whistles all play at whatever volume they're meant to play at. So you can't sneak in and out as well.
Ah, I see. Yeah. And I was going to ask you about terraced dynamics later, but I might as well ask you about it now, about the pluses and minuses to that, where you don't have as much control. You don't have those kind of modulations where you can swell on or off. Like, how do you work with that to create a sense of suspense or drama if you can't use that kind of modulation in that way?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And really that has to do with every organ is unique and different for many different reasons. But you take the organs that Bach was playing on, and yes, the pipes are just sitting out in the room. There's no control of the volume. And so you do have that terraced dynamic effect where you can play soft, you can play the next level louder and so forth, but not really that smooth crescendo, decrescendo sound that an orchestra can make. And so the music was composed for that. Then you move into when the instrument changes and they start putting pipes in what we call a swell box, and like basically a room, but the room has shades on it, almost like Roman shades or shutters that open and close that you control with a foot pedal. And so all you're doing is this Doppler effect of letting the sound out of the room gradually. And that's what leads to the theater organ, where all the pipes are behind a room. And so you're able to grit that gradual pianissimo to fortissimo crescendo without having it chunked. So it just depends on the instrument and the time period, the music you're playing.
Mm. Well, I know you taught yourself organ, but you also studied it formally. What was the bit of formal study?
Oh, definitely getting rid of bad habits and all that. My organ interest came... I was in high school, and it wasn't because of any religious reasons or anything like that. I didn't grow up in the church, but the pipe organ, Cal Poly installed a brand new pipe organ in their auditorium, and they had it front page of the paper, and you could sign up for 5 minutes to come and play it. I saw a picture of that beautiful instrument. I thought, I want to do that. And I went and did it, and that kind of led to people asking me, what church do you play at? I said, nowhere. And then they invited me to come to their church to come play. And I got kind of all of a sudden got a job doing it. But no formal training yet. Super, super green. But when I came to Fresno State, study music, I was a sax major. Like I had mentioned, I didn't feel like I wasn't going to get any better. But the organ was something I was really interested in chewing on more. And found the teacher there at Fresno State and basically said, I'd like to do this. And she said, let me hear you. And yeah, we can work with that. And just lit the fire from there. So the formal training definitely, of course, helped. Because yeah, you pick up bad habits and things you're trying to do yourself. It's not the same.
Hmm. And then you did your master's in conducting. How do you feel like that affects your organ performance?
Yeah, a lot of organists are also choir directors. Yeah. And my conducting degree was actually on the instrumental side. My big plan out of high school was go to college and become a high school band director. But then the pipe organ took me other places. But I think conducting, doesn't matter what instrument you play, it's all about gaining and learning more musicianship and becoming a better musician. And definitely translating that to the organ is where you're sitting there. You are being the conductor. You're being the orchestrator also, and choosing which sounds need to come out louder, softer, control it all. So I'd say conducting definitely helped my organ playing.
Let's say you're driving through a any city, America, and you stop at a church, there's an organ there. They find out you're an organist. They're like, here, come up and play around with our organ. Tell us what you think. What are the things that you notice initially when you're playing on a new organ?
The first thing, before you even sit down to the instrument, it's the room, right? You take a look at the acoustics of the room, and you can tell if it's a building that's full of carpet and comfy chairs, and it's probably not going to sound as good as it could.
Yeah.
So that's the first factor. But then when it comes to assessing the instrument, you look over the stops. Those are all the knobs or tabs, and each stop is set up to go to a rank, what we call a rank of pipes. And each rank of pipes is basically like a different instrument in the orchestra. So you have flutes, you have strings, brass, all that. And kind of judging, what do I have in my orchestra here? And those are the stops, and then you're able to build the sounds that you want based on that. And you can say, these flutes, these ones were built a little bit brighter for my taste, or this is a darker sound. That's the beauty of each organ being different, too.
Yeah. We're going to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you, and I want you to tell me whether you think they're over or underrated. And
okay.
Feel free to pass on any of these. There's a lot of controversial topics coming your way. We'll start with the one that I know you've participated in before, keyboard competitions. Do you think those are over or underrated?
I'd say underrated. I think there's a lot of value in playing the sport, in being competitive.
You participated in one. What do you gain from them? It's just, you're just a greater focus and attention to detail because you know it's a competition, or what is it exactly?
Yeah, totally. Greater focus, attention to detail there. Typically, they're accompanied by maybe a master class as well with the adjudicators. And so that is just solid gold learning right there.
Okay. Next one, Me and Ed's Pizza.
Oh, overrated.
Yeah, you don't like it?
I'm not a big fan of their crust.
Okay. Yeah. Is that true across your household, or do you have to grit your teeth and pick up some
Me and Ed's for your family? I've converted everybody. We are a pineapple pepperoni pizza house, though, I will tell you that.
Gotcha. All right, next one, harpsichord.
Underrated, definitely.
Okay. We need more of that?
Yeah, totally. The harpsichord, another keyboard instrument. This is the predecessor of the piano. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of pieces, especially Baroque, the piano didn't exist yet. They were playing on harpsichords and organs. And the harpsichord, the technique to play it is completely different from any of the others. And so I think it is such a delicate, fragile instrument that keyboardists all over could learn something from it, definitely.
Okay. Next one. Bach Toccata and Fugue in D minor. Do you think that's over or underrated?
Can I say aptly rated?
Okay, properly rated.
Properly rated, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the known ones. I was curious. A lot of these, you'll have a few, you know this, like there's a standard repertoire. There's a lot of pieces that are repeated over and over again. And, you know, I think performers can get more tired of them than audiences do because they're just like, oh, there's so much. I'm not saying this piece is not an important piece in the history of music, but it's just perhaps overplayed relative to other pieces.
Yeah, it's what people... It's definitely the piece everybody associates with the organ. And I will say the fugue, I would say, is definitely underrated. Because even I've heard it and played it 1,000 times. But if I'm actually like listening to it and we get to the fugue section and it just rolls right along, it's really good. it's always good.
Yeah. It lasts for a reason.
That's right.
All right. Next one. And this one's kind of a softball for you to just reiterate the importance of this. The Monroe Review.
Oh, underrated, of course.
Yes, Donald and Doug.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, they've covered you a bunch of times. I'm very excited. Donald now has an arts program in KVPR that's going to air a couple times.
Yeah, just saw that. A week.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We need a lot more arts coverage in this town.
Yeah, definitely. And having a good solid place to go for it is important.
Yeah. Next one. This one's out of left field. Wayne Newton.
Oh, underrated.
Why is Wayne underrated? Mr. Las Vegas.
Mr. Las Vegas is right. I'll tell you, we went and saw Wayne Newton this year for my birthday in Vegas, and by hands down, best show on the Strip. It was like he was in our living room. We were that close to him. And just the showmanship.
What makes him special? Yeah, just articulate.
Yeah, he's one of the last kind of the legends in that he wasn't in the Rat Pack, but that era, and those were kind of his mentors. He was a teenager, young guy at that point, but he has always been solid entertainer. He was 83 or 4 right now, and of course he's got the voice of an 80-year-old man who's been singing all his life, but it doesn't matter. We're right there just part of the show with him, and beautiful history and stories he tells. Excellent.
Okay, here's an either or. Would you rather play a concert where you only played Baroque style music or where you only played French Romantic style music? And I'm talking about the organ. Ooh. And those, they have distinct styles to them, so I'm curious.
Yeah. I would say French Romantic. It's because it's a little bit more lush, can be a little bit more forgiving in terms of pushing and pulling a tempo and all that. And just where I would do better at, I would say.
Hmm. All right, next one, the documentary Pipe Dreams.
Yeah, this was great. Underrated for sure. I don't know if many people even know about it, but this was, I think it came out probably during COVID, and that's why. But excellent documentary, and it follows competitors going on this, I think it's the Canadian International Organ Competition. And one of the artists who was on that, Alcee Chris, we brought him to Fresno and gave a concert here. Excellent and great guy. But yeah, good documentary into the hidden world of organ competitions.
I watched it. It's fascinating. All right, next one. Contemporary religious music. I'm talking about the stuff that comes out of Tennessee that maybe has 3 or 4 chords and sounds familiar because it sounds like the last one that you just listened to. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I'd say overrated.
Is there any parts of it that you like, or is it just kind of feel like pop music that's been recycled for churches, like big evangelical churches?
Yeah. No, there are some out there that are really good. And even if it follows simple chord structure, that's not what it's about at that point. Yeah. But I think the industry that's been created around it is what's way overrated and not the right direction.
Yeah. Next one, another piece that's close to my heart, the Toccata Symphony from number 5. This is Charles-Marie Vidor.
Yes, it's my ringtone. So
so perhaps underrated for the average.
Yeah, but a little bit overrated in the organ world. That's a bit much.
Yeah. Next one, Downtown Paso Robles.
Ooh, so that's where I'm from, and it has changed drastically over the past 30 years. And I think it is perfectly rated. It is the perfect little downtown square, restaurants, everything. It is sweet.
Yeah, it's a great place. I don't think I go as much as I probably should over to Paso Robles. I feel like I should be going at least once a month, given how nice it is and how close it is. But alas, would you rather be an organist in the silent film era or be the organist for the San Francisco Giants?
Ooh, I'd say silent film era.
Silent film era? Okay.
Yeah, more variety. I love a good ball game and that, but you can only play Take Me Out to the Ball Game and so many times. Silent film gives you a little more flexibility.
All right, next one, another organ piece, the Toccata from the Suite Gothique.
Maybe a little bit overrated too. That's another spooky one. If you heard it, you'd recognize it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's jump into talking about Warner's because they've got an organ there and I want to talk to you about it. So they have a Robert Morton organ. Can you explain what that is, like its distinctiveness, its attributes?
Yeah, theater organs started by a man named Robert Hope Jones. And this is back east. And again, like I mentioned earlier, the purpose of the theater organ was to replace the silent film orchestra, essentially. And so they sold these like gangbusters. So there were a couple of big names, big company names out there. The biggest was Wurlitzer. And many of us know Wurlitzer from all musical instruments, jukeboxes and things. And then out in California, they were in New York. And in California here, we had Robert Morton Company out of Van Nuys. And all of these theater organ builders had contracts with the different theaters, whether it's the Fox or that. And so Warner's was originally the Pantages Theater, built in 1928. And Robert Morton built the organ for the theater, even though sound had already come to film by 1928. But that was part of the whole design originally. And I don't know really what the thinking was, but you do it. And boy, are we grateful that they did, because the Robert Morton at Warner's is well known in the organ world, the theater organ world, also in the historic theater world. It is, I call it the Ethel Merman of the theater organ, because she is loud, and that was built to fill that space. So yeah, Robert Morton, just different takes on building the theater organ than Wurlitzer.
Yeah. Well, if you were beyond just size, if you were to distinguish between the organ you play at University Presbyterian versus that one, what are qualitative differences between the two?
So a big one is that theater organ has actual percussion instruments in it.
Okay.
So you have tuned percussion, like it has a xylophone, it has a full marimba, a vibraphone, all that actually real instruments are playing, not just a synthesizer. And so you don't get those percussion instruments on a classical, more church organ.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there's some snobbery in the organ world, where theater organs are perceived as being inferior because they have the kind of instruments or the abilities to make gag sounds, if you will, or things that correspond to entertainment and less to fine arts.
Yeah, no, totally there is. And I think it's just like the naming the difference between the violin and the fiddle. Yeah. It's the same. It's the same instrument. It's how you play it and who's judging. Yeah. But no, there definitely is. Of course, I'm into it all, but yeah.
Yeah. An organ like that, as old as it is, it, I'm sure, requires maintenance. And I imagine it's a very kind of niche industry to maintain organs. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what it would look like to try and preserve that instrument going forward?
Totally. So the instrument was built in 1928 down at Warner's Theater. And like I said, these are mechanical marvels. Most pipe organ guys that I know, they're also into model trains and trains just because of this engineering.
Right.
Yeah, they go together, this mechanical engineering that happens. So with the pipe organ, you have a lot of things that, as long as they're taken care of, they're going to last forever. We look at the organ at Notre Dame in Paris, right? You have pipes there from the Middle Ages. So with the theater organ, like at Warner's, for example, we have the air comes from a big blower in one room, and that goes through a big tube that goes to these big boxes that we call reservoirs, and most people would call them bellows. And they're big wooden boxes that have leather on them, and the leather is really what wears out the most, right? These are moving parts, and so about every 50 years, things need to be re-leathered. So that's a major component. Another component is the kind of electrical part with the theater organ, because at this point, we got electricity going, and there are magnets. Basically, the way the organ works is you're sitting at the keyboard and you press a key, and that sends an electrical signal to a magnet that sits underneath a pipe on a chest, and that allows air to go into that one pipe. So like I said, it's a big box of whistles. And so those electrical things fail over time, of course, but those are the main ones. But surprisingly, for almost 100 years old, she's never had a complete rebuild. And we have been quoted from the top preservationists in the country in Chicago, about 800,000 to a million is what it would take to do a complete museum quality restoration of the instrument there. And it can be done. It would last another 100 years.
So let's say that some shark-like private equity person buys Warner Theater and they're like, organ feels like it's from another time. It's going to cost a lot to maintain. And they're like, Cactus, why should we keep this organ?
I think all they have to do is see it and hear it. That's really, if we look at the history of Warner's, the organ kind of is what has saved it over its 100 years. When it was up for sale in the 70s, it was purchased by Frank Caglia and the Caglia family. And the joke, which was the truth, is what he said, is I bought an organ and it came with a theater, because he was in love with the organ. And was able to save that movie palace because of the instrument. And yeah, I think that's definitely the case, especially when we look at kind of the detriment of these beautiful theaters and their instruments from basically the 40s onward, where they were tearing things out and demolishing them. Now we get to a point where we regret that. And now there are only handfuls left. I think there are only three Robert Mortons in their original theaters that hadn't been moved, like the Warners. Many of these have gone to the four winds, and some people have theater organs in their home or in a barn out somewhere, but actually remaining in their original places, there are not many left. Mm. So it's uniquely American too. It is, we were kind of the ones that started it. Then there was a theater organ company called Compton in Britain that did a few there, but they're not found all over the world as they were here.
Yeah. What's your vision for that organ's role at Warner's? Are you envisioning symphonic style concerts? Do you think that there's ways to use it creatively with film or with other kind of arts events? What would be your vision for how you would articulate using that organ to build a program?
Yeah, totally. So what we started this year is a four concert series, and that started in March. I did one that was all sounds from the silver screen. So I did movie music, theme from Star Wars and all of that. And it was great.
Never go wrong. Actually,
yeah, no, it can't go wrong with any of that. And it's this huge, beautiful space that you're sitting in, 2,000 seat theater, and the instrument just fills the room. But when we look at how can we bring new audiences to the organ, for one, many of them just had never seen it as it is in the first place. But then also you have people like, and maybe you've seen her stuff, organist Anna Lapwood has gone crazy online, and she's selling out tens of thousands of seats to organ concerts, whether it's in a cathedral or she's got a touring digital organ. She's actually doing a stadium tour coming up. She's, what? The pipe organ? It's amazing.
Let me get on my soapbox here for a second. I've heard similar things about the publishing world. I'm a librarian, so I work in the world of books, and there's been all this crisis of literacy stuff, and some of it's real, but I think we often underestimate how many people are into fine arts just because they aren't the loudest ones.
Yeah.
And the truth is that we've been selling more books this year than we have in the last decade. And our perceptions of the demand for certain what are perceived to be niche activities are more based on who's articulating the problem rather than the cold hard facts of how many people actually want to go attend an organ concert, buy a new literary fiction novel or something. So I think we often have these assumptions that we operate with, and some of them are true and some of them are not. And so I'm assuming that there's probably lots of people in Fresno that would love to come to a concert like that, but the perception is, oh, is that what really people want? It's like, we don't really know until we try, right?
That's exactly right. And that, I was hesitant about committing to a bunch of dates for doing stuff last year. And then I thought, let's just try it. Let's open the doors for an art hop and I'll play. And all of a sudden we got 100 people there. And then they're like, wow, this is, how do we find out more? And then
yeah,
it's validating to me, definitely. It's 'cause when you're doing something that you don't realize that, oh yeah, not everybody gets to do this or hear this and see this as regularly as I do. And it doesn't have to be something brand new. There's just people haven't experienced it before, and it's unique enough and definitely niche enough, but it's something that has to be done in person also. Yeah. You yeah. can't, listening to recordings online just don't do the justice of being in a room with a pipe organ playing. Because like I said, it's playing the room.
Yeah. I want to talk about a few kind of general Fresno topics. What, I know you're involved with the San Joaquin Valley American Guild of Organists. Are you the president of that?
Yeah.
Or we leader capacity? I don't know what that term is.
Yeah, we call it the dean. And it's the AGO, American Guild of Organists.
It's not snobby at all that they call you the dean. No, it definitely fits the content. What is the state of that organization, both in membership and activities?
Yeah, so it's a national organization. Our chapter here in Fresno has been around over 80 years, and it used to be a lot bigger because, of course, every church had an organist, an organ, and all that. And it's declined over the years. Membership, of course, and that the AGO is really much more into the sacred realm or the concert realm, yeah. also, and unfortunately, decline. But there has been a resurgence, like I said, just of interest in general in the pipe organ. And so we've had new faces. We bring in two concert artists a year, and then maybe we do another program like a hymn festival or something like that with a choir. but that's where we're at the moment. So we partner with the Keyboard Concerts to bring in an organist on that series. And it's great. Just as the keyboard concert artists, the organists we've brought in over the years are top players in the world. It's pretty amazing to get that talent here in Fresno. So we just need people to listen.
Yeah. And we talked about your pipeline to playing organ. You had a circuitous path and there was kind of chance and luck involved. Yeah. You don't want every future organist to have to go through that rigmarole of finding their career. If you have someone that's interested, you want, ideally, there would be like some kind of pipeline, no pun intended, to get them. Mm-hmm. So what does it currently look like? Let's say I'm a student at Bullard High School and I'm like, I want to learn to play the organ. And they came to you for advice. What would you tell them?
Totally. Yeah. So we've got some of our AGO members are teachers. They teach mostly piano, but if there is a student interested in the organ, we do the organ side as well. And yeah, contact us at the AGO and get lined up with someone. That's how it starts. It's just this spark of interest that usually goes with most people that kind of choose the organ or the organ chooses them in a way. And I had a student 2019 started, and it was in high school and just really wanted to play. And now he just graduated from St. Olaf with a degree in organ performance and landed a job. It's amazing.
So it does seem like you need a little bit of a mentor, though. It old school kind of music education where you have some, you find someone that knows the craft, like an apprenticeship, and you learn it from them. So it's a little different than playing other instruments.
Totally. Right? Definitely. Yeah. It's not something you're going to go to the music store and get lessons on. Not anymore. But yeah, it's just there. Every organist I know would be more than willing to get connected with somebody younger who wants to, because it is a matter of passing the torch, because it is a dying art.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's wade into controversial topics now. So I'm on the full disclosure. I'm on the board of the Fresno Philharmonic. So I've been involved in this in different capacities, but arts funding has been going through a lot of challenges, specifically Measure P. And one of the challenges that I perceive is disputes about what is art, the value of certain art forms versus the other art forms. And so there's a lot of discussion and frustration that people are experiencing. Let's imagine that the city council calls you tomorrow, whoever from it, and says, we'd like you to consult with us on this Measure P arts grants. And we just need some help in rethinking how we approach it because it just hasn't gone well. What would be your kind of big picture thoughts about how we should think about funding art in Fresno?
Well, I know most recently there was a lot of discussion about kind of the legacy art groups and putting a cap on the Measure P funding there. And it's one of those where I hear the arguments, of course, but I also understand, you look at other large cities of our scale, in some states, we would be the largest city in that state. And yeah. You look at the programs and funding that they have, and I think these legacy groups are important to creating the future. It doesn't mean that we fund it and keep doing it the same way that we always have been. I think that's where a lot of the hang up is because maybe you have some of that crowd who's, this is the way we've done it, of course. So the change is difficult, but I also think it's important that we just try stuff. Listen to what people would like to try, and if it works, and if it doesn't, then it doesn't. We'll try something else. Go for supporting this other project.
Yeah, I've had a lot of compassion for some of the arguments that the emerging artists have made. Like, I don't want people's tax dollars to just be assumed that they're going to one institution just because it's large. That's ridiculous. But I also see just the bias that exists in the world of nonprofits. Because the larger the nonprofit, the more people you can hire to work to get grants and et cetera, et cetera. It kind of builds on itself. But at the same time, large organizations have capacity to audit things if things aren't going well. And so there's some capacity questions that I have for some of the smaller organizations. But I think the truth is there's challenges at every level. I think what we need to do a better job of, and this is a scary thing because no one wants to do it, but saying what art is. If art can be anything, then anyone can ask for it for some project that they have. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be, we do need to come to some kind of community understanding about what is valuable to the city to create, and let's fund that. And so that's hard because everyone has their own vision for what they think art is and what they think would be valuable to the city. And everyone, and you see this online, everyone wants to speak for the people or speak for the city or speak for the legacy institutions or whoever it is. Everyone wants to speak. And it just makes it really hard to kind of come to an understanding.
Yeah, no, I agree. And part of that, I teach at Clovis Community College and mostly music appreciation courses. And so in that, it's a general ed course. And so I don't have, you know, they're not music majors, but we have these discussions of what do you listen to? And nowadays, everybody has their own pocket of music, style, something, subgenre of a subgenre that they're listening to that I've never heard of. And so it makes it more difficult to come to a consensus with a lot of these decisions on the what art is. And we start the semester going through music of the Middle Ages, and then we end with John Cage and his crazy music ideas, and people question that. So
they're like 4 minutes and 33 seconds where we don't listen to anything. What is this?
Exactly.
We're going to close this podcast with my favorite section, which is book recommendations. What are a few books you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Okay. Since it's been summertime, I will give you my summertime book recommendation. And summer is just for fun. So this summer, I had my fun book was, believe it or not, Liza Minnelli's memoir.
Really? Just, did that come out recently?
Yeah, it came out recently. And
I'm sure it's fascinating.
Yeah, a bit of a pleasure reading. Oh, I can't think of the guy's name. Michael Feinstein, one of her best friends, confidant, helped write it for her. But if you're into Broadway, showbiz, and kind of that history, it's an amazing take on that.
There's lots of incredible anecdotes in that book.
Yeah, definitely a lot of fun. And then this is nothing new, but just, again, summer reading is for fun for me, and we've got three little ones at home. So we have restarted the good old Chronicles of Narnia. I actually never completely read all the books, so I said, I'll do that this summer. So classics, that's it.
Yeah, this summer I went to stay with some friends in England, and we went to Oxford as a day trip. I was actually able to go to the door, the face, it's not a lion, but it looks like a lion, and it's got the two kind of satyr nymph things on the door, like Mr. Tumnus, and yeah. Then there was a light post, and it felt like I was like, this was one of those things where you're like, this is it, this is it, right. But it's cool, but it's this is it. So anyway, I grew up reading them as well, and I had always had visions in my mind of what things look like, and
yeah.
You see a person, you're like, wow, there it is.
Yeah, totally. It's fun reliving that with kids, definitely.
All right, Cactus, what's on the horizon for you? Concerts, events, what's going on? What are you working on these days?
Yeah, so we've got the next organ concert down at Warner's in our series. It's on Sunday, September 13th at 3 o'clock, and this is the Best of Broadway. So it's all Broadway songs. I'm going to have a couple of guest vocalists with me. And one you didn't ask me over underrated was Phantom of the Opera. I was expecting that.
You know, that felt too simple. But yes, it is what, let me ask you now, is Phantom of the Opera over underrated?
I think it's overrated. And then I hear it and I'm like, it is just so good though. It's so good.
Yeah.
For the listeners that want to experience that live, I will be playing a little Phantom of the Opera on the Best of Broadway show down at Warner's. And then the other thing I'm hoping, you mentioned ball games, and I am in talks with the local baseball group, and maybe we'll be able to play some games down there. So be on the lookout for that, some announcements.
Are you going to do some Grizzlies games?
Maybe.
All right. I'll be excited for that. Play a little fugue during the seventh inning stretch.
Right.
All right. Cactus, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan, for having me.
Fresno's best. Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider giving us a rating and review. It goes a long way in helping others find the show. We'll see you next time.